views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly Neff, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio, Starcom Radio Network, CRN Digital Talk, and more. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some healing, inspiration, and knowledge, because every week on the show, we have some of the most gifted scientists, healers, speakers, and authors helping you to become the greatest version of yourself. Woo! And you can find out more by visiting thelucidplanet.com and streaming all of our podcasts for free on lucidplanetradio.com, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and more. And also please connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, The Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly. Now, today, first and foremost, I want to wish everyone a very happy 420 holiday. 420 is, of course, the cannabis holiday. If you're wondering where this came from, you can go on the website and read some of my articles from last year, and also my interview with my current guest from last year. We talk all about the meaning of 420. But basically, you pretty much have to be living under a rock to not know that the legalization of cannabis is really one of the most groundbreaking and contentious and important issues of our time, certainly of our generation. In the past, 20, 25 years, we've gone from total prohibition to full legalization in several states, coast to coast, and more than half the population living in states where medical cannabis is legal. We've also seen just the incredible benefits that legal cannabis has had to society, from being hailed as a miracle cure to benefiting social programs, especially in my home state of Colorado, and to helping to curb opiate abuse, and just having a lot of benefits. And in fact, really the greatest majority of people ever since polling are favoring the legalization of cannabis. So the U.S. is definitely leading the charge. And this really is an amazing cultural phenomenon. And yet, these times of momentous change, they've also ushered in an administration which at the federal level is still quite hostile towards cannabis medicine and legal reform. So what does this mean for the future? Where are we going with legal cannabis? And what is the new scientific research from this last year or so teaching us? So to sort through all of this and more, I'm just delighted to welcome back Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of NORML, to the show. It's kind of been a yearly tradition for us around Cannabis Holiday 420 that Mr. Armentano is joining me to discuss again some of the press issues surrounding the legal debate, the efficacy and safety of cannabis, our current government's take, how to raise awareness for how much this plant can help people, and also what 2017 and even the future after that holds. Very briefly, Paul Armentano is the Deputy Director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. He also serves as a faculty member on Oaksterdam University, and his writing and research has appeared in over 750 publications, scholarly and or peer-reviewed journals, as well as in more than a dozen textbooks and anthologies. So Mr. Armentano really is one of the foremost experts on this topic, and I'm just delighted to welcome him back to the show. Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's good to be here, Kelly.
Busy couple weeks?
It has been. I mean, it's been a busy past year.
Yeah.
Almost since the time we last spoke, we had an unbelievable election campaign season heading into November, where marijuana law reform was on the ballot in 9 states and won in 8 of those states. And then we've had a rapid transition trying to maintain those gains with a new administration that is rather hostile to these sort of progressions. So it has definitely been a busy time.
It seems like it was the best of times, it was the worst of times type scenario. where we have
exactly,
you know, a division and dichotomy. But what is the public like? What does the public perception look like right now?
Well, we have more public support in favor of marijuana law reform, whether it is allowing qualified patients to use marijuana therapeutically or whether it's simply allowing an adult to have retail access to marijuana. There is more nationwide support for those types of changes today than there has ever been at any time in our nation's history, both on the state level and on the national level. The most recent polling we've seen from Gallup, from Quinnipiac University, from Pew, from these major pollster groups, is that about 6 out of 10 adults say marijuana ought to be legal for anyone over the age of 21, and about 9 out of 10 adults say that certain qualified patients ought to have access to marijuana therapeutically if their physician recommends it. That is tremendous support for any political issue, but particularly for a hot button issue like marijuana law reform. We've never seen those kind of numbers until very recently.
It's amazing. And yet we have, you know, the new attorney general saying marijuana is a dangerous drug and there's violence associated with it. And then also kind of not retracting, but I think yesterday or the other day, he said that he was shocked at the public backlash from calling cannabis a dangerous drug. I mean, is there any, you know, scientific or real life context in which there's violence associated with medical or recreational marijuana?
Well, if there is any violence associated with the black market trade of marijuana, it has to do with the very fact that prohibition drives markets underground, and it promotes players in those markets who tend to be criminals, who decide their differences with other purveyors in the market through violence, as opposed to engaging in courts of law. Just as we saw alcohol prohibition fuel a violent black market,
yes,
and we saw that market go away when alcohol was legalized and regulated, any concerns about black market violent activity in the marijuana trade would largely be eliminated by simply bringing that market above ground, like states have done in Colorado, in Oregon, in Massachusetts, in California. And when we look at the data post-legalization in some of these jurisdictions, like Colorado, like Washington, and elsewhere, we see no spike in violent criminal activity. And in some cases, we see a downward trend in violent crime in these states in the years immediately following legalization.
So a lot of this is kind of like old rhetoric, it sounds like, a lot of what's coming. Or maybe the AG is specifically talking about the drug trade that's coming in on the black market. But
well,
certainly,
in the case of Jeff Sessions, you know, here's a man who, when it comes to drug policy, appears to have walked out of a time machine from about 1984 or 1985. This is someone who acknowledges wanting to turn back the clock and go back to this bygone era of the 1980s, where rhetoric and ideology influenced drug policy rather than science and evidence. And he seems to believe that those policies in the 80s were effective, when the consensus is by most experts that they were an abysmal failure. And
Dare
it is
and
notable that Jeff Sessions was surprised about the backlash he has been receiving recently with regard to his comments about marijuana, because he has been so disconnected from the fact that the public at large has pivoted and change their positions on marijuana, while an artifact like Jeff Sessions has not.
What do you think that this means, if anything, for the states that have recently gone either newly medical or newly recreational? I'm particularly interested in California and Massachusetts.
You know, so this is a very interesting question. I don't think anyone has a definitive answer. Certainly during the campaign, Donald Trump as a candidate made a number of different statements, several mixed statements, but seemed to indicate that he would be respectful with regard to states that had enacted marijuana policies that differed from federal prohibition. His underlings and members of his cabinet since he has been elected seem to have walked back many of those statements since that time. This administration certainly does seem to draw a distinction between medical use states versus adult use states, even though, of course, the federal law makes no such distinction. My speculation would be that if the federal government is going to take any action to try and interfere or intercede in these state policies, that it will likely be in states with newly formulated adult use laws like California, like Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. In some case, it may happen because the federal interference is at the behest of state lawmakers who are still smarting over the fact that their constituents voted for marijuana policies that they oppose. We know, for instance, that the governor of Maine has made it very clear he does not want to enact the will of the people and regulate the adult use of marijuana. And he has asked the federal government to intervene in the state of Maine. We saw the governor of Arkansas make a similar overture. So it is possible that where they are invited to interfere, the federal government may take action. Conversely, we've seen other jurisdictions, like in Washington State, where the attorney general preemptively has publicly stated that they do not want the federal government to get involved in their marijuana-related activities, and they will fight tooth and nail to prevent this new administration from taking any sort of action to try and preempt Washington's marijuana legal market. So again, we're largely going to have to wait and see, but I don't foresee major changes at this time, particularly in jurisdictions that are not in many ways courting the federal government to take some sort of action.
Wow, this is absolutely fascinating. You're listening to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and we're going to take a quick break, but we have so much more in store on this 420 special today. Paul Armentano is going to talk with us more about public policy and also about science and efficacy of what we're actually finding when it comes to cannabis and its effects and efficacy. So stick with us, and we will be right back after this break.
You, yes, you, can be the highest version of yourself. Wellness coach and natural beauty expert Dr. Agnes Renkel is on a mission to help you play the game of your life. Win in vibrancy, health, and beauty, because you deserve it. Dr. Agnes goes beyond the limits in her personal coaching sessions to revolutionize health and wellness. Now is the time to unleash your true power. For more information, visit dragnesfrankel.com.
When your body is awakened, your spirit comes alive. Dana Canetto is a transformational guide, embodiment coach, and spiritual mentor assisting women in realigning with their truth and embodying who they are by connecting to the wisdom of their body. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show Network for Body Divinity Radio with Dana Canetto. For more information on Dana and her services, visit dragnesfrankel.com. That's D-A-N-A-C-E-T-T-O. LucidPlanetO.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and today I am here with Normal Deputy Director Paul Armentano, who's speaking with us about the current state of cannabis legalization, policy, efficacy, and science in 2017. And my goodness, there's a lot of stuff going on. But Paul, before we continue, can you just share your contact information and let people know how to get in touch with Normal if they want to be involved in activism and awareness for marijuana?
Sure. We have a website that we update daily that people can visit if they go to normal, N-O-R-M-L.org. We also have a blog on that front page that, again, is updated virtually every day. We have a section of our website at normal.org/act where people can read about all pending state and federal legislation that's relevant to marijuana law reform, and they can contact their elected officials either in support or opposition to specific bills that are pending. We also have a chapter affiliate program where we have chapters literally throughout the United States if people want to volunteer and become essentially active in their own marijuana law liberation. So I would encourage people to check that out. People can always contact me directly at paul@normal.org.
Awesome. Inform yourself. Stay woke. It's the only way in these days and times. And there's just so much information out there. And it's really great. One of the things, just as an aside, that I love about Paul's work is that when you get into debates with people, we're all talking like, cannabis, cannabis leads to psychosis and all these terrible things and blah, blah. You can actually say, well, here's a, double blind controlled study that says X, Y, and Z. Science speaks for itself. And I think that that's really important. So staying informed is the key. Now, when we left off, we were talking about kind of this unbelievable changes happening in all directions, where we've got 8 out of 9 states in the last election either got medical or recreational cannabis approved by the people. And then we also have our current government administration, which seems to be kind of backpedaling. Now, I live in Colorado. Cannabis has been legal recreationally for adult use for 5 years with really great results for the state. Everyone's very happy with it. So it kind of seems preposterous that the federal government would want to interfere. But then again, there seems to be this overriding problem that cannabis is still a DEA Schedule I controlled substance. And as long as that remains, technically on the federal level, the entire plant remains illegal. Am I correct in this?
Yes, you are correct. In fact, when one looks at the actual classification of marijuana, that classification is very clear that they are talking about every element of the cannabis plant except for the fiber stalk of the plant or non-germinating seeds. But the law is very inclusive and makes the point to say that every compound, every derivative, every preparation of this plant are also classified as Schedule I under the federal government's definition of marijuana.
So one of the things that people are possibly the most concerned about is all of the confusion that happened recently with CBDs. I know CBDs, obviously the cannabinoids, they're part of the plant And they've been shown to have a lot of medical benefits, but without the psychoactive effect. So extractions and distillates and creams and salves of CBDs have been sold even in states that maybe don't have recreational or just medical. People manufacture CBD salves. Everyone, at least in my kind of sphere, is very really in favor of CBDs. And then in January, the feds announced that CBDs were illegal. They were taken off the shelves. People were confused. I would love to hear your insight on what's going on this. And I know our listeners really would as well.
Sure. So there's a lot of debate regarding the legal status of cannabidiol. And as a result of this regulatory change that took effect in January, there has been some lawsuits filed that at the end of the day will probably definitively decide this issue once and for all. But it has long been Normal's contention and the contention of most experts in this field, as well as the FDA, the DEA, the NIDA, and Congress, that cannabidiol is in fact federally illegal. It is a Schedule I classified substance. Now, to clarify, cannabidiol is a distinct cannabinoid. It's one of about 120 distinct cannabinoids that have been identified in the marijuana plant. Yes, it clearly possesses certain therapeutic utility, particularly as an anticonvulsant, but also as an anti-inflammatory, and it seems to have a number of therapeutic properties. Unlike THC, all of the identified cannabinoids in the marijuana plant are non-psychotropic. So CBD is certainly not unique in the fact that it does not induce euphoria. Other therapeutic cannabinoids in the marijuana plant do not induce euphoria as well. In fact, only THC possesses therapeutic properties and induces euphoria. But again, under the federal classification of marijuana, all of these cannabinoids are considered to be Schedule I substances if they appear organically in the marijuana plant. The only exception is synthetically produced THC, which is classified as a Schedule III controlled substance, while naturally occurring THC is still classified as a Schedule I controlled substance.
It kind of seems absurd. I know there's a lot of people who speculate that cannabis, marijuana, it's being kept on the Schedule I so that pharma companies can develop more synthetic products that analog, you know, THC and its other components, and then sell those to make a huge profit, because obviously you can't patent a plant, but you can patent the way you analog it. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Well, at the end of the day, it was Congress, through the passage of the Controlled Substances Act in 1970, that made the decision to place the cannabis plant as a Schedule I controlled substance, putting it in the most restrictive category for any controlled substance in America, and defining it as having the highest potential for abuse, no accepted medical use in the United States, and deeming it to be so unsafe for human use that even under closely monitored medical supervision, this drug still could not be administered safely. That's the three criteria that Congress said marijuana met in 1970. And that position has never changed in the 47 years since the passage of that act, despite the fact that we now have 30 states that authorize the medical use of marijuana by statute. We now have another 16 states that make an exemption under their state law for the medical use of cannabidiol specifically. So clearly, in 2017, that definition does not pass the smell test. But I certainly don't think it was Big Pharma in 1969 that was pushing Congress to take that position. I think that was a position that was based on ignorance by Congress, and I think it remains ignorance and political apathy on the part of lawmakers and political inertia that continues to maintain this flat earth policy. At the end of the day, pharmaceutical companies will find ways to make money off the marijuana plant, whether it's Schedule One or whether it's descheduled altogether.
And what's it going to take for it to be descheduled? How is this inertia going to finally, you know, turn into some kind of momentum?
You know, the irony is that every year bills are introduced before Congress that, were they to be enacted, would in fact deschedule marijuana, would remove the marijuana plant from the Controlled Substances Act, thereby providing states with the flexibility and the autonomy to essentially regulate cannabis as best they see fit. And every year, those bills are assigned to committee to die, regardless of the fact that literally tens of thousands of constituents contact their members of Congress in support of these pieces of legislation, that tens of thousands of Americans contact the chair of these committees in demand of vote. And despite this outpouring of public support, we see this fairly hard to comprehend recalcitrance on the part of members of Congress, particularly leadership in Congress, who continue to stick their head in the sand, cover up their ears, and close their eyes, and refuse, much like Jeff Sessions, to acknowledge that the world has changed in the last 30 years when it comes to Americans' attitudes toward marijuana.
And it just seems so bizarre when you can have medical states where it's prescribed medically, but then still on the Schedule One with no medical use. I mean, it's been years. California did Prop 215, what, 1996? So it's been like 20 years of this, you know, and something's got to change.
And I would have been the first to have told you, Kelly, 20 years ago, that this is an untenable position. That
it
you cannot have federal law saying that marijuana is absolutely illegal for any purpose whatsoever. At the same time, you have states flagrantly contradicting that law and licensing individuals to commercially produce and dispense marijuana. I would have told you when you had two or three or four states flouting federal law that this situation was untenable and couldn't continue. And here we are now with a majority of states in the country flouting federal law. And I see no indication that the federal government is going to take efforts to close this gap in policy. It seems that Congress is content to continue with a position that is untenable and do it indefinitely.
It does seem like Congress and even the executive branch want it this way. But I just can't help but think if someone could appeal this all the way to the Supreme Court or all the way to at least the Federal Court of Appeals, I feel like maybe the judiciary is going to be the branch to change it. But it's just getting, it's honestly so absurd and confusing. And people are totally baffled and confused by this. And then you have all these other things like the banking system and and IRS, 280E, and all these other problems as well that come with it being federal Schedule One. And yet it's this huge multi-billion dollar business. So on that note, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back here on Lucid Planet Radio, Paul Armentano is going to talk with us more about cannabis legalization, efficacy, policy right here on the eve of 420. So stick with us.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important?
Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and my guest today, Paul Armentano, Deputy Director of Normal, is here speaking with me about all things cannabis legalization and efficacy here as we are celebrating 420. Now, Paul, as I'm sitting here at my computer, I'm seeing this brand new article tweeting at me from Normal, which is talking about how Trump should abolish the drug czar's office. Can you explain a little bit about what this means, just in case people haven't heard about it, and kind of how this is a very anti-science agency?
Sure. Well, the drug czar, and, you know, just to say that, to
it
say that title
ridiculous.
Sounds so strange in 2017 that here we have a congressional appointments or presidential appointments of czars and czarinas. In American politics. But the drug czar's office was created in 1986 through a law that was passed by Congress. And this is its own agency that addresses drug policy, has its own funding, has its own staff. But by definition, the individual who was appointed to hold the position of drug czar by the statute that created the drug czar's office and that continues to fund it today, that individual must reject or oppose any attempt to legalize any substance that is presently classified as a Schedule I drug. In addition, they must oppose the spending of any monies on studies that would evaluate or assess the use of a Schedule I drug. So, for instance, by definition, the drug czar's office must not only oppose the enactment of medical marijuana laws, they must equally oppose the study of medical marijuana or medical marijuana laws. And that's what I mean when I say we're talking about a flat earth policy that's driven by ideology and not science. This agency, by definition, must be anti-science because the statute that created it in a bygone era, 30 some odd years ago, demands that it be anti-science. And that's why Normal says it's not a matter of just picking and choosing who should be drug czar. We ought to abolish the agency altogether, because no matter who is chosen for that position, they must take an anti-science attitude that is no longer supported by the American public.
Well, and this article, you know, just nails it. A big part of President Trump's campaign was eliminating bureaucratic waste. I can't think of a position that is more wasteful and useless in this day and age than, quote unquote, drug czar. And it's been, I think it's the longest it's been that we haven't even had one, right? It's been a while since we've had someone.
We've had an interim drug czar. But again, the profile and the significance of that position has fallen so low that the average person probably isn't even aware of who this person is or what function they uphold in 2017.
I know. When you say drug czar, I just think of like Scarface sitting in his desk. You know what I mean? It doesn't promote an idea of someone who's there, you know, for the public good. Let's just say that it just doesn't. And so I think really what we need to address is the science and the research, because there have been more barriers for medical marijuana research than for other Schedule I drugs. I mean, MAPS is closing in on FDA clinical phase 3 clinical trials for MDMA, right? Which is also Schedule I. But cannabis seems to have had some of the biggest barriers to research.
It's true. There are regulations in place specific to marijuana for clinical research purposes that are not in place for other Schedule I drugs. And this is why for quite some time I've tried to address this issue by saying, look, if we really want to have a greater prevalence of clinical research regarding cannabis, the answer is not simply to reschedule cannabis, because these restrictions on research are specific to marijuana, not marijuana scheduling. And so it's actually the regulations that need to be changed. And one of the most onerous of those regulations is the fact that any FDA-approved trial using marijuana, where actual patients are going to be administered marijuana, it must, by statute, use a plant product that is grown and dispensed by the University of Mississippi. And we know full well today that that product that is produced by that university under a government monopoly contract is not reflective of the actual marijuana products that patients and other adults are using in jurisdictions like Colorado and Washington, and quite frankly, throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. So in spite of this, there's still been a lot of research happening. It's just that if we're talking about specific approval for the FDA, it has to only come from this one place.
Yes, correct. And even with those hurdles now, keep in mind, there is FDA-approved clinical trials regarding the safety and efficacy of marijuana. In fact, the state of California has paid for and conducted dozens of double-blind placebo-controlled trials assessing whether marijuana is safe and effective for the treatment of neuropathic pain, whether it's safe and effective for the treatment of multiple sclerosis, how it affects people with compromised immunity, how it affects driving. We actually have several, not just dozens, but at this point probably well over 100 controlled clinical trials that have been done throughout the last few decades specific to the safety and efficacy of marijuana in specific patient populations. And that's actually quite a large total, because if you look at the number of pivotal trials that are conducted for conventional investigational drugs prior to FDA approval, and the Journal of the American Medical Association did a review of this just about 2 years ago, typically drugs are approved by the FDA on the basis of two clinical trials, and in over a third of the drugs approved, they're approved on the basis of a single clinical trial. So even though we have these hurdles in place for marijuana, even though those hurdles make it far more difficult than it ought to be to perform these gold standard clinical trials, we still have exponentially a greater total of that type of gold standard evidence for marijuana than we have for most conventional medications.
It's incredible. And I know during the election campaign last year, it was very frustrating because Hillary Clinton kept saying there wasn't any research. And there is a lot of research.
And keep this in mind, Kelly. This was a news story that came and went much faster than it deserved. But in January of this year, with very little fanfare, the National Academy of Sciences published their report on the state of marijuana science. And The National Academies, now this is a group of 500 scholars who are often asked to weigh in on public policy. They reviewed between the years 1999 and 2016 over 10,000 peer-reviewed scientific studies as they pertained to marijuana. Among their conclusions was the fact that there was conclusive scientific evidence, and that was their term, not mine, that cannabis, the plant, and cannabis-based formulations are effective in treating chronic pain, in treating nausea, in stimulating appetite, and in treating multiple sclerosis. That was their number one conclusion, a conclusion that is directly, again, in conflict with federal law and the federal definition of marijuana. Not only did they say that marijuana conclusively has medical value, but they also broke open this narrative that we don't know enough about marijuana because they acknowledge, basing their finding on over 10,000 studies that have been conducted within just the last decade and a half.
That's unbelievable. I feel like the person in the government who finally is going to break this Schedule One is going to be like the greatest hero forever. You know what I mean? Like someone could just step up and do this. Maybe the president, I don't know. Somebody could do this. It would just have such far-reaching repercussions. And then the banking system can get involved and it wouldn't be this whole IRS. And right now, I mean, at least I'm in Colorado, it has to be all cash businesses. The banks will not let you own a marijuana recreational or dispensary. You have to pay your taxes in cash. And, I mean, it's completely absurd. So something really needs to be
done. And again, when Jeff Sessions expresses supposed concern about violence in the marijuana industry, well, one way to address those concerns would be to allow this industry access to banking and make it in such a manner that it is no longer a cash-only based business, which makes these businesses targets for criminals.
Absolutely. I mean, the amount of security they already have. I mean, we're talking, you know, everything, vaults and crazy security doors and everything, you know. But the amount of cash moving in and out, even just to pay their taxes, you know. But that's not their fault.
They're forced to. They have no other option.
Absolutely.
And what I find very interesting, and I've yet to have someone provide me with a good answer regarding these questions. But we now have in several states. Between the application fees and the regulatory requirements, we have states where regulators are now demanding six figures from those who want to receive a dispensary license. Are they receiving that money in cash?
Yeah, what's going on? The state has no problem taking it.
Exactly.
Well, I know in Colorado, it's like $400,000, $500,000 just for the license in Denver right now because there's a moratorium and, you know, it's a hot commodity. And, you know, where's that? So that's just like half a mil cash to the state, you know? So it almost feels like maybe the states need to be advocating on behalf of the people to the federal government.
They do. And when you asked earlier, what is it going to take to bring this change in federal policy? I think at the end of the day, that is what it is going to have to take because federal lawmakers on this particular issue seem to have taken a position that they are not going to listen to their own constituents. Maybe they will listen if the state governments themselves begin to try and leverage and advocate for change at the federal level.
That, I think, makes a lot of sense. And people, you can get on Normal and find out how to contact all of your state and federal representatives as well to let your voice be heard if they decide to listen to us. We're going to take our last break. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up this Cannabis 420 special with Paul Armentano by talking about kind of the five myths of cannabis and how to really understand the truth behind them. And also, we're going to talk about some of the most important research that's come out in the last year since we spoke. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
Thank you. Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Welcome back to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and happy 420. Paul Armentano of Normal is here speaking with me about cannabis policy and efficacy. It's been a really fascinating conversation, and I'm just really grateful that you came back on the show, Paul. So thank you. I want to ask you about this article you recently published. I think it was on The Hill and a bunch of other places I saw it, which is the five most common myths about marijuana. And I just thought it was great. Could you maybe share with us some of these myths and kind of how we get around them?
Sure. Well, of course, as anybody listens to this program knows, I did not need to stop at five. There's certainly more myths that exist than just these five. But I did want to focus on some of the claims that we're hearing recently, particularly from this new administration, that just don't hold up under scientific scrutiny. And one of those is this notion that has been said now by Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, and by Jeff Sessions, this notion that somehow these changes in marijuana policy are fueling the opioid epidemic, when in fact the science says just the opposite. What the science shows, and this is consistent now in well over a dozen studies from various jurisdictions throughout the United States and also from Canada, is that in jurisdictions where people have legal access to obtain marijuana, not only do they reduce their use of opioids, but we also see a reduction in overall mortality associated with the use of opioids, both prescription and illicit opioid-based drugs. We see reduced levels of hospitalizations due to the use of opioids. We see less instances of doctor shopping, where patients are going to multiple doctors to try to fuel their opioid habit. We see less traffic accidents that are a result of people being under the influence of opioids. And we see overall that people spend less money on conventional medications, not just pain medications like opiates, but also mental health medications like benzodiazepines, antidepressant drugs, sleep aids. Use and spending of those conventional pharmaceutical drugs falls in locations where patients have access to marijuana. And again, the data on this is plentiful and consistent.
And they can find that on the Normal website. Right.
Yes, they can. And again, this is something we have been reporting on in real time as these studies have been published. I think this year alone, we've seen four or five additional studies looking at this association between marijuana use and opioids. And again, these results are consistent across the board.
I just want to bring something up really quickly, which is one of the downsides of prohibition that I've personally experienced. I have a friend whose father was in the hospital at Anschutz, which is like a Colorado University state hospital, and they were giving him a bunch of opioids, and he wanted cannabis. And they told her it is a federal crime to bring cannabis into their hospital, and they are not allowed to give any patients in the hospital cannabis. They have to just stick with their pharmaceuticals. And I just found it insane. You know, you're in the hospital, you need pain reduction, that helps, and they won't let you have it, even though we live in a state where it's totally legal and medical.
Right, right. You know, that's an issue that other jurisdictions are addressing. I can't speak to the validity of that claim because I can think of at least two states, Connecticut, and believe it or not, Maine, that by statute do allow hospital personnel to either administer or simply acknowledge that a patient in a hospital is using medical marijuana. That's also being discussed in California. So my guess is that decision is actually left up to the individual facility, but there's no federal mandate. And we see that a lot with cannabis. We hear about pain patients who are drug tested and they are refused their pain medication because they test positive for marijuana. And they're told that's because marijuana is federally legal. No, that's a decision that the individual pain clinic is making. We hear about medical marijuana patients being denied organ transplants and being kicked off the wait list because they test positive for marijuana. We're told that's because marijuana is federally illegal. No, that's an individual decision made by the individual facility. And oftentimes, we have to be aware and we have to leverage the fact that these policies, not only are they not science-based, not only are they not mandated by the feds, but they violate common humanitarian decency, and we have to fight to change them. And some states, slowly but surely, are making these changes. In California, for instance, you cannot be denied an organ transplant anymore because you are a medical marijuana patient. But that occurred because we changed the law.
Too right. So power to the people. I smell a lawsuit at any rate, or many lawsuits. but that's amazing. And I'm glad to hear that because I found that very disturbing. I know if I was in the hospital, I was a medical patient, which I am, I would much prefer to have that option at least to use cannabis.
Yes, we're hearing about the same issue now in nursing homes. We have an older generation of patients who recognize that medical marijuana is a safe and effective and an alternative that often has less side effects than the conventional medications they're taking. They want access to marijuana. They want to use marijuana. And it's the nursing home, the individual facility, that is making a decision and saying you can't have marijuana. Again, it's those instances where advocates at the local level can get involved and assert pressure, because these are decisions that are often made by these local facilities, by a handful of individuals. And it's a lot easier to persuade an individual than it is to change the law.
Very, very true. We've only got a couple minutes left in the show. I feel like we could do a couple more of these, Paul. what are some of the other myths about cannabis that are out there floating around that we would like to address?
Sure. Well, real quick, again, one of the myths we hear time and time again is this idea that marijuana is a gateway to the use of harder drugs. As we saw, as we talked about earlier with opioids, not only does the science show marijuana is not a gateway, but in many cases, it's actually an exit drug. It helps discourage people from transitioning to some of these other harder illicit substances. In fact, the paper just came out this week from Canada, showing that when individuals have legal access to marijuana, they reduce their use or they quit crack cocaine, which was the end point of the study. That's what they were monitoring. We also have data on opioid-dependent subjects who they are more likely to complete their treatment if they have access to marijuana than if they stay completely drug abstinent. So again, this notion that marijuana is a gateway, the science tells us just the opposite, that in many cases it's a terminus drug.
That's amazing. Anything else in your, I know we have a lot, there's still a lot more amazing things we can talk about. Actually, I wanted to ask you very quickly, since it's 4:20 tomorrow, do you have any advice for people who are celebrating the holiday?
Of course, always be mindful of the rights of others. Be safe. Use cannabis in moderation. If one is going to use cannabis, it's probably not a great idea to mix it with large amounts of alcohol. And certainly if one is engaging in the use of cannabis, and if they use cannabis and alcohol, they definitely should not get behind the wheel, because the data is very clear that there is an additive adverse effect on driving when those two drugs are consumed at the same time.
Yep. And if you're coming to the Mile High City, be mindful of altitude. Even edibles, vaporized, smoked cannabis, it will hit you much harder. I just speak from experience of when people visit here, what I've seen, you know. And also Lyft is offering these green cars all around the city, where I think if you call them at 3:20, they'll be there by 4:20, something like that. I don't know. But if you go to Lyft.com for Denver, you can find out all about that. We're really trying to promote safety. Obviously, the law is a little bit iffy on the DUI, DWI scenario. So best case, I agree, is do not mix with alcohol and just be safe, you know, and take good care of yourself and have fun, of course.
Exactly. 4:20 is a time to celebrate, but I will add, on 4:19, the day before 4:20, Normal is asking people to spend the day taking action. And we have a number of action alerts, a number of actions people can take on 4:19 to oppose the Drug Czar nomination, to support the newly formed Congressional Cannabis Caucus, to write your lawmakers in support of a number of these federal bills. And we really do hope that before people celebrate, take action first.
I love that. And today is all about taking action. Bam. And you can go to normal.org and find out exactly how you can take action for your city, county, and state, and federally. On that note, Paul, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Paul Armentano of Normal, everyone. It's been great to have you on. And also big shout out and thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. And remember, you can download all of our shows at thelucidplanet.com. So, Paul, have a great 4:20, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
It's always a pleasure, Kelly, and hopefully we can talk again before another year goes by.
Exactly. Let's not wait a year. Okay, everyone, take action today. Have fun tomorrow. Be safe. Stay happy. Stay woke. Light and love. See you next week.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.